This is Nemo Cicados, and I hope we're finding you and finding me here at KPPPLP, Fargo Moorhead, 88.1 FM. Once again, this is Nemo Cicados at KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead 88.1 FM, and here we are adding local queer color to your airwaves for this program of Finding Me. Tune in to listen at 5 p.m. on the first Wednesday of the month for new content on the radio on 88.1 FM and our website at kppfm.com, and you can click on the local programming Finding Me and listen to one of the podcasts if you missed the program. We have live stream Facebook etiquette. If you are watching via Facebook Live, please refer to KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead's Facebook comment rules. The links will be dropped in the Facebook comments. Be a good audience. Don't harass a host, the technician, the moderator, or other audience members, or the moderator will enforce the rules and ban you for a temporary period of time or permanently. Links will be dropped into the comments, or just open a new tab in your browser if you can and take a look so you don't get banned. If you want to comment on the show or have an interview arranged with me, you can contact us at 701-566-0917, at Nemo Potatoes on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or contact me at kppfm.com/finding-me and hit the contact tab, or email me at nemo@kppfm.com. Then you can also follow us on Facebook at KPPP Radio, 88.1 FM Fargo Moorhead, at People's Press Project, The People's Press Project, and at Mexican Online, Mexi-Can. Donations, here we go, to Fargo Moorhead's newest low-power commercial-free radio station can be made at our website on kppfm.com/donate and check out our underwriting opportunities at kppfm.com/underwriting-opportunities on how you can support the first queer radio program in the Red River Valley. So last month I told you the history of the word queer, Rose McGowan, TERFs, and the obstacles trans folks face to expressing our identities in a cis-sexist world not made for us, which leads me to my next topic, dysphoria. So what is dysphoria? Trans identity and true scum trans medicalists. So I have some notes here in front of me, and I'm just going to read off some of the sources that I found so far from the gender dysphoria definition from the American Psychiatric Association. So let me just read through this real quick. Top to bottom, it's really important that you check out this link. Pretty straightforward in how they identify gender dysphoria, but it's not the only way to identify it, so keep that in mind as I read this. So if you don't know what gender dysphoria is, this is how the APA identifies it. It involves a conflict between a person, physical, or assigned gender and the gender with which he, she, they identify. People with gender dysphoria may be very uncomfortable with the gender they were assigned. Sometimes described as being uncomfortable with their body, particularly developments during puberty, or being uncomfortable with the expected roles of their assigned gender. People with gender dysphoria may often experience significant distress and or problems functioning associated with this conflict between the way they feel and think of themselves, referred to as experienced or expressed gender, and their physical or assigned gender. that gender conflict affects people in different ways. It can change the way a person wants to express their gender and can influence behavior, dress, and self-image. Some people may cross-dress, some may want to socially transition, others may want to medically transition with sex change surgery and/or hormone treatment. Socially transitioning primarily involves transitioning into affirmed gender pronouns and bathrooms. People with gender dysphoria may allow themselves to express their true selves and may openly want to be affirmed in their gender identity. They may use clothes and hairstyles and adopt a new first name of their experienced gender. Similarly, children with gender dysphoria may express the wish to be of the opposite gender and may assert they are or will grow up to be of the opposite gender. They prefer or demand clothing, hairstyles, and to be called of the name of the opposite gender. Medical transition is only relevant at and after the onset of puberty. Gender dysphoria is not the same as gender nonconformity, which refers to behaviors not matching the gender norms or stereotypes of the gender assigned at birth. Examples of gender nonconformity, also referred to as gender expansiveness or gender creativity, include girls behaving and dressing in ways more socially expected of boys or occasional cross-dressing in adult men. Gender nonconformity is not a mental disorder. Gender dysphoria is also not the same as being gay or lesbian. While some children express feelings and behaviors relating to gender dysphoria at 4 years old or younger, many may not express feelings and behaviors until puberty or much later. For some children, when they experience puberty, they suddenly find themselves unable to identify with their own body. Some adolescents become unable to shower or wear a bathing suit or undertake self-harm behaviors. So, this is how they identify it through diagnosis. The Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, DSM-5, provides one overarching diagnosis of gender dysphoria with separate specific criteria for children and adolescents and for adolescents and adults. In adolescents and adults, gender dysphoria diagnosis involves a difference between one's experienced expressed gender and assigned gender and significant distress or problem functioning. It lasts at least 6 months and is shown by at least two of the following. 1. Marked incongruence between one's experienced expressed gender and primary and or secondary sex characteristics. 2. A strong desire to be rid of one's primary or and or secondary sex characteristics. 3. A strong desire for the primary and or secondary sex characteristics of the other gender. 4. A strong desire to be one of the other gender. 5. A strong desire to be treated as the other gender. 6. A strong conviction that one has typical feelings and reactions of the other gender. In children, gender dysphoria diagnosis involves at least 6 of the following and associated significant distress or impairment in function, lasting at least 6 months. 1. A strong desire to be of the other gender or an insistence that one is the other gender. A strong preference for wearing clothes typical of the opposite gender. 3. A strong preference for cross-gender roles in make-believe play or fantasy play. 4. A strong preference for the toys, games, or activities stereotypically used or engaged by the other gender. 5. A strong preference for playmates of the other gender. 6. A strong rejection of the toys, games, and activities typical of one's assigned gender. 7. A strong dislike of one's sexual anatomy. 8. A strong desire for the physical sex characteristics that matches one's experienced gender. For children, cross-gender behaviors may start between ages 2 and 4, the same age at which most typically developing children began showing gendered behaviors and interests. Gender atypical behavior is common among young children and may be part of a normal development. Children who meet the criteria for gender dysphoria may or may not continue to experience it into adolescence and adulthood. Some research shows that children who had more intense symptoms and distress, who were more persistent, insistent, and consistent in their cross-gender statements and behaviors, and who use more declarative statements, I am a boy or girl, rather than I want to be a boy or girl, were more likely to become transgender adults. Now, this is kind of like maybe outdated, especially considering that I just read to you last month a very long, very detailed, a bunch of anecdotals of other transgender folk who don't necessarily grow up the way one expects to when they know they're transgender, but cis people don't understand that. Like, for example, let me tell you my personal anecdote of my transgender experience. When I grew up as a child, I was put, well, funnily enough, I was told that I was kind of plain looking, maybe even ugly for a girl, which is just kind of hilarious to being who I am now. And no matter what, every time they tried to put me in girls' clothes, it just didn't look right. Although I had both male, female, and unisex clothing. But oftentimes, the unisex and male clothing looked better on me. Continuing on that, for a while, I did in fact have a phase in my life where I was very into things like Disney, Disney princesses, the Barbies, the whole thing that would be typical of someone raised as a girl. However, as I grew older, I started beginning to have experiences now that I can identify them in retrospect of my masculine identity that you see before you. And, you know, if I told a therapist that, or a gender therapist, they may or may not dismiss my transgender experiences simply because I still, you know, I didn't mind playing with dolls or whatever, but you can't really define transgender experiences based on singular things like playing with boys' toys or girls' toys or dressing one way or the other way when you just are transgender and you know it, right? So there's a few gender definitions and pronouns that they define here on the psychiatry patients and families gender dysphoria and what it is. So definitions, pronouns. You probably have been reading this so far. Gender denotes public and usually legally recognized lived role as boy or girl, man or woman. Biological factors combined with social and psychological factors contribute to gender development. Assigned gender refers to a person's initial assignment as male or female at birth. It is based on the child's genitalia and other visible physical sex characteristics. Gender atypical refers to physical features or behaviors that are not typical of individuals of the same assigned gender in a given society. Gender nonconforming refers to behaviors that are not typical of individuals with the same assigned gender in a given society. Gender reassignment denotes an official and usually legal change of gender. Gender identity is a category of social identity and refers to an individual identification as male, female, or occasionally some category other than male or female. Is one's deeply held core sense of being male, female, some of, or both, or neither, and does not always correspond to biological sex. Gender dysphoria, as a general descriptive term, refers to an individual's discontent with the assigned gender. It is more specifically defined when used as a diagnosis. Transgender refers to the broad spectrum of individuals who transiently or persistently identify with a gender different from their gender at birth. Note, the term transgendered is not generally used, and is generally frowned upon. Transsexual refers to an individual who seeks or has undergone a social transition from male to female or female to male. In many, but not all cases, this also involves a physical transition through cross-sex hormone treatment and genital surgery, sex reassignment surgery. Genderqueer, blurring the lines around gender identity and sexual orientation. Genderqueer individuals typically embrace a fluidity of gender identity and sometimes sexual orientation. Gender fluidity, having different gender identities at different times. So, literally, you might feel more strongly in a masculine way one day and a more feminine way the other day, but you are the person who defines how you feel, you know? Cisgender. Agendered. Without gender, individuals identifying as or having no gender identity. Cisgender describes individuals whose gender identity or expression aligns with the sex assigned to them at birth. Gender expansiveness conveys a wider, more flexible range of gender identity and or expression that typically associated with the binary gender system. Gender expression, the manner in which a person communicates about gender to others through external means such as clothing, appearance, or mannerisms. This communication may be conscious or subconscious and may or may not reflect their gender identity or sexual orientation. And then lastly on this page, preferred gender pronouns. Some transgender and gender nonconforming people may prefer gender neutral or gender inclusive pronouns when talking to or about them. They and their are sometimes used as gender neutral singular pronouns. Singular gender neutral pronouns also include ze or they and hir, as in ze, zie, hir. And this physician reviewed by Rana Parekh, MD, MPH, February 2016. So that's what I have to show you for that page. I know it was really long, but I thought it was important. Let me see if I can find, let's see, something else here for you guys. Next on this list. Yeah, I wanted to, you know, I already said that we already have doctors that bar us from when deciding we aren't trans enough just because we like traditionally gendered activity or expression. So, like, and I told you about me. And next I have on this list is reading a few articles that I found by Sam, I think it was. Oh no, before that, I have another page. It's LGBTQ2S Toolkit, Making It Better Now. So I'm going to drop that link below in the comments section, which gives you some more information about the difference between sexual orientation terms and main gender identity terms, so that you don't get confused and everything else, and you don't end up using words that would otherwise be harmful, as well as posters that are on this same webpage by @feministwork on Tumblr. And they are a little bit outdated, but I think they're still relevant, at least historically speaking. I never, like, you know, frown upon taking a look at words that were once used, whether they were slurs or not. And it just depends on whether you reclaim it or not, which I didn't talk about last show as well, like taking back the word queer. You can use it if you want, but you don't have to. And I'm not going to stop you if you do or you don't. And let's see. Next, I'm going to get into these articles. There's like at least three articles, and I want to talk about how, you know, yeah, maybe you are trans if you feel gender dysphoria, and that's for you to choose whether you transition. But I'm also going to talk about the people who don't feel gender dysphoria but are also transgender. And these are going to be articles by Sam Dylan Finch, who writes for a couple of places. Let's see, Everyday Feminism and also Let's Queer Things Up. So I will get to that momentarily. This article is titled, "These five myths about body dysphoria in trans folks are super common, but also super wrong." So this was written by Sam Dylan Finch in June 17th, 2015. Still relevant, I think, because this is the experience of other trans folks. And I think, you know, we should talk about it because they are just as valid as those who do experience dysphoria or haven't quite understood what they're feeling that doesn't necessarily match the typical trans experience, but is still an experience nonetheless. So we're going to get into these myths, and I will read from this article. So let's start with the first myth. Myth 1, body dysphoria happens because you're in the wrong body. So we're going to go into, with Sam here, of why that's wrong. And so they start with, "I remember when an acquaintance naively asked me, 'If you're non-binary, you don't experience body dysphoria, right?' Ouch. As a trans person who experiences dysphoria, which is the stress or discomfort that occurs when the gender someone is assigned does not align with their actual gender, nearly every day, the myth surrounding it, like that one, hit me right in the feels. It's a very difficult part of my reality as trans, and the assumptions made about my experience can make it all the more painful. And while it's true that trans issues are more visible than before, some of the very basic myths around our experience, or lack thereof, of body dysphoria still prevail. Visibility is not always by default a good thing, especially if that visibility is so limited that it creates a very narrow idea of what the experience of being transgender is really like. A lack of real, authentic narratives only feeds into the myths that surround our experiences. Those myths ultimately create two major issues. One, cisgender folks can't understand our experiences, and two, transgender folks begin to doubt their experiences because they aren't considered the norm. So, it's about time that we unpack some of the myths. Let's start with these five. Myth 1, body dysphoria happens because you're in the wrong body. The short answer? Not necessarily. Some trans folks with dysphoria do sincerely believe that they were born into the wrong body and were meant to have an entirely different one. However, not every trans person with dysphoria believes that to be true. Saying that our bodies are wrong can sometimes suggest that we're inherently flawed, or that our being trans is a mistake, rather than part of our identity. Sometimes it's not about being in the wrong body, it's about needing modifications to feel more at home, and many people, cis and trans, opt for dressing or modifying their bodies in a different way to make it their own. If you mostly liked your house, but wanted a different wall color, you probably wouldn't tear down the entire house and move somewhere else just to have green walls, right? Everyone's experience of dysphoria is different, so imposing the wrong body narrative onto everyone's experiences is too far large of a generalization to be accurate for every single transgender person. Oftentimes, the wrong body narrative is really just a shortcut so that cisgender folks don't actually have to actually engage with or learn about the experiences of trans folks, which I talked about. It dismisses the complexity of our experiences in favor of a quick explanation of our existence so that real, nuanced conversations don't have to take place. But instead of oversimplifying, what we really should be doing is taking the time to learn about trans folks and opening up real conversations, not shutting down a conversation by explaining us away with problematic stereotype. That is, it's best to let each trans person define their experiences with their bodies in their own words. And so, Sam goes into our next myth. Body dysphoria is necessary to being trans. Nope, some trans folks don't experience body dysphoria at all. Some experience social dysphoria, which is discomfort with how they are perceived and misgendered within society. And some trans folks experience neither body nor social dysphoria at all. Right? So, this gets confusing for some folks who strongly associate gender identity with biological sex, but the reality is that sex and gender are different. There's not necessarily a correlation. Because sex and gender are different, and everyone's experience of sex and gender is different, you'll find trans folks with a variety of understanding around their bodies. For example, although I was assigned female at birth, I don't consider my genitalia to be female. Consequently, I'm not uncomfortable with that part of my body, because I don't consider it to be a contradiction to my gender identity, right? It's just a body part, like an elbow or a nose. There's nothing gendered about elbows or noses, they simply are. I still experience my body dysphoria, primarily around my chest. Sometimes our mental maps just work out that way. There are plenty of trans folks who experience dysphoria around sex parts of the body, and plenty who won't. And it's not right or wrong, it's just the way they relate to their body. Trans folks may have a lot of dysphoria or none at all, but most of will have gender euphoria. That is, euphoria or happiness upon being correctly gendered, upon naming their identity, and being validated and recognized as their authentic self. I like to think that it's the euphoria, not the dysphoria, that makes a person trans. Ultimately, being transgender is not about our bodies as much as it's about how strongly we identify with societally created gender categories. That, on its own, will not predict the kind of relationship we have with our bodies. Thus, not every trans person will experience body dysphoria, and that's totally okay. Like, for me, for example, I told you my story a little bit, but as I grew older, I found that dressing a little bit more neutrally, so to speak, in unisex clothing or in men's clothing, I was far more comfortable, not only because the quality of clothes is so much better for some dumb reason compared to women's clothes, but also it just fit my personality better, my sense of style, my identity as a trans man. And on top of that, when I wanted to explore my names, I was already doing that, and I didn't even realize it was such a trans thing to do, to want to change the names I identify with. Like, for a while, I wanted to play with the name Artemis, because she was really cool as a figure, but it was also the name of my favorite book character who was male and was named Artemis as well, and from the Artemis Fowl series. That was one of my favorite books, fantasy books. And on top of that, then I played with the name Sam because it was the closest to my birth name, and then that didn't fit either, and it was only upon researching anthropology, learning about Aztecs, or aka the Mexica, as we, want to properly refer to them as, I found the name Nemo, and that's why I go by that name now, and prefer to go by that name. That is my name. And it could be, too, if you, want to check out the fundraiser to change my name, because still not legal yet, but at the very least, I can work toward that society, you know, change. So you should check that out if you want to, like, help me get to that goal. So in this next myth, we have myth 3, body dysphoria is essentially experienced the same for every trans person. Well, if it isn't obvious by now, trans folks do not experience body or social dysphoria in the same way, right? Some of us don't experience it at all. Some of us feel it every day, and some of us fall somewhere in between. Sometimes the severity is quite intense. For others, their dysphoria is mild. Sometimes the severity varies day to day. Some of us feel dysphoric about our hips, some about our faces, some about our hands, some about our chests. Sometimes I feel dysphoric about my uterus even though I can't see it. Sometimes it's just a lingering anxiety that isn't centered around a specific body part, but rather a tension that we can't let go of. No two trans people experience dysphoria in an identical way, so it's best to leave your assumptions at the door. Which takes us to myth number 4. With a little self-love and better attitude, body dysphoria can be fixed. Well, there's several problems with that, as we're going to get into in this article. I've been told that I wouldn't be dysphoric if I had higher self-esteem. All you need is self-love, I was told. Be a little bit more body positive. For some reason, there are a lot of people who believe that that body dysphoria is an issue of self-esteem. But I can tell you that as someone who is pretty into themselves, self-love is not something I am lacking, and yet I still have abundance of dysphoria. So what gives? Well, being transgender isn't about hating yourself. For me, it's about aligning who you are on the inside with what's visible on the outside. Transitioning was my greatest act of self-love. Instead of existing in a body that distorted my truth, I decided to embrace who I was and make that visible to myself and to others. Similarly, I'm not looking to get top surgery because I hate myself, it's because my chest interferes with making my true self and my gender visible. What I see on the outside doesn't align with what I feel on the inside, and it creates a lot of chaos and discomfort. Discomfort about my body doesn't mean I hate myself, and that applies whether you're transgender or cisgender. My dysphoria is caused by my body that erases who I know myself to be and who I love being. Body dysphoria is not a mind over matter situation. Body dysphoria is not something that just takes a little willpower to get over. And it's invalidating and presumptuous to say that it's somehow my fault that I'm experiencing it. So, that leaves us with the final myth, number 5. Non-binary and genderqueer people don't experience body dysphoria. Alright, let's get into that now. Right, so about that acquaintance. Hi there, genderqueer person with body dysphoria right here. There are plenty of folks who are non-binary or genderqueer that also experience body dysphoria. I've written about my really scary experience with dysphoria before and what folks can do to support someone who's living through it. And far and away, the most common response was dysphoria. It's true though. There are plenty of folks who are non-binary or genderqueer that have experience with body dysphoria, and those experiences are just as legitimate, overwhelming, and at times debilitating as any other binary trans person. Sometimes there's this misconception that non-binary people aren't completely trans, or that their experiences of being trans are somehow less serious, less valid, or less sincere. This myth extends over to our experiences with dysphoria too, which are often assumed to not exist or not be as serious. You can nip that right in the bud, though. Non-binary people's experiences of their gender of dysphoria are just as important, serious, and valid as any binary person. Period. I could write a book full of myths and about body dysphoria. There's a lot of confusion and mystery surrounding it. Many people want to know and what it's like, but are afraid to ask because it can be such a painful experience. But the truth of the matter is that body dysphoria and gender dysphoria more generally is different for each and every trans person. It's difficult to impose a single narrative on such a unique experience, and consequently, even transgender people themselves often wonder if what they're experiencing is dysphoria. It's okay to be curious and to want to know more about our experiences. However, it can be harmful to perpetuate stereotypes, which is why it's better to keep an open mind and to allow trans folks to define their own experiences. Because really, there could be as many experiences of dysphoria as there are trans folks in this world. So before you assume, take a step back and remember, every one of us is an expert on our own body and gender or agender, no matter how we identify. And that concludes that article. And like, Sam Finch here seems to be like a real big pro on all this. So that was just one article. They also talked about, also in Everyday Feminism, Not all transgender people have dysphoria, and here are 6 reasons why that matters. And then it gets a little bit different. So I'm going to pull that up just a moment. Not all transgender people have dysphoria, and here are 6 reasons why that matters. Also by Sam Dylan Finch. Here we go. So we're going to go into this article, also on Everyday Feminism. I remember talking with a friend of mine who is transgender with the assumption that we both experience dysphoria, which is the distress or discomfort that occurs when the gender someone is assigned does not align with their actual gender. As I was talking, I could see their eyes start to stare off in another direction. "Are you all right?" I asked, puzzled by their sudden disinterest in our conversation. On an ordinary day, Kai and I could talk gender for hours. The only person who seemed more passionate about trans identity than me was definitely Kai. But suddenly, in conversation that should have excited them, they seemed to be someplace else entirely. "Well, I don't..." Kai paused. "Don't judge me or anything, but, like, I don't experience dysphoria." At that point, I had never heard of a transgender person not experiencing some kind of dysphoria, but there they were, right in front of me. My instinct was to be protective over my own transness. The idea that dysphoria was not required, and that anyone could just identify as trans if they wanted to, seemed to water down the importance of my identity and the struggles of my community. No, their community. Our community. I was getting possessive, trying to deny Kai's identity, which was so unlike me. Just a minute ago, Kai was my comrade. Wow, now, suddenly, I was pushing them to the margins. Why would I try to tell someone that their gender is or isn't, having spent a lifetime of being told the same? "Yeah, I get it," they said, seeming to read my mind. "It's threatening to a lot of people, so I don't often talk about it." But in my years as an advocate, I continued to meet more trans folks like Kai who don't experience just dysphoria, and further, who are afraid to open up about it. I've been lucky enough to learn from them and understand now why my gut reaction to exclude them was such a problematic one. So why shouldn't we define transgender people on the basis of dysphoria? Let's talk about it. So, here we also have a numbered list. So 1, it suggests that gender identity is for outsiders to decide. How could that be problematic? It's weird that some trans people are totally on board with making rulebook for transness, instead of encouraging people to self-identify and declare their gender identities for themselves. When we allow other people to make the rules, we strip away the rights of trans people to a self-identity. If we tell trans people that their identities don't belong to them, we uphold a culture where the naming of gender identities belongs to outsiders instead of ourselves. When I started to doubt Kai's transness, what I was saying to them was, "You say that you're transgender, but I don't recognize that or believe that." I was saying that I knew Kai's gender better than they did. Yikes. "I don't know about you, but I don't want to exist in a world where I have to follow a set of prescribed rules before I can claim my own identity. I should be able to declare what my gender is and have it validated, regardless of how I experience it. Transgender people constantly have to resist having an assigned gender imposed on them. Do we really want to assign and impose a gender onto other trans people?" So, 2. It medicalizes the experience of being transgender. We can go into many reasons why. Just check out my last show. Talked about it right at the end. The phrase gender dysphoria became the go-to phrase for after gender identity disorder was deemed offensive and inaccurate. Since then, the two phrases have been used interchangeably in the medical realm. Need I remind you that Western medicine has been less than kind to trans people historically? Trans people were, quote, treated by being encouraged to conform and accept their assigned gender rather than transitioning. Medicalizing the lives of trans people hurt us for a long, long time. It meant that we were treated as having a psychological disorder rather than a valid identity. Placing the lives of trans people into an illness framework ultimately stigmatized their identities and left their needs to be dictated by medical professionals rather than trans people themselves. The medical model disempowered trans people. Trans people were treated as deviants with a shameful mental disorder, and language like gender identity disorder and gender dysphoria is tied to that history. The medicalization of trans people was a major source of oppression and harm. When you suggest that dysphoria is the one way of determining whether or not someone is trans, you are relying on a medical model that wasn't created by trans people, but rather created by Western medical professionals who view transness as a disorder rather than identity. And I'd like to move as far away from this framework as possible. I agree with you, Sam. If you ever watch this, I agree with you. Changing it from gender identity disorder to gender dysphoria doesn't change the fact that it's still operating within the same model, medical model, and still functioning as a diagnosis. And number three, it's a Eurocentric definition of transgender. A lot of folks will say that transgender as an experience didn't originate in the West. And they couldn't. They would be correct. There have been trans experiences in many cultures globally, long before the West had any concept of transgender. Some identities outside the West that you might know of include Two-Spirit, Hydra, and some Kethohes, and they have a history that precedes ours. My apologies if I pronounced that third one incorrectly. If you want, you can comment and tell me how to say it the right way. Many trans folks in the Western world insist that to be transgender is to be dysphoric, without acknowledging that this is a very Western understanding of what it means to be trans. It doesn't acknowledge that transness can exist outside of the West and has existed outside of it long before we came along, with its own definitions, language, insights, and experiences. To say that being transgender is exclusively about experiencing dysphoria is making a universal statement for all trans people, but steeped in Western understandings about gender. It completely erases indigenous and international identities and experiences. It's tricky, and sometimes really problematic, to apply individual understandings of gender to all people. Transgender, as an umbrella, is so diverse and complex that it's best to avoid generalizations altogether and allow people to name their own experiences. And now we go to number four. It equates being trans with distress and dysfunction. And really, that experience shouldn't be what it is. It kind of shames us. If someone came up to you and asked you what it was like to be transgender, it probably wouldn't be as simple as saying, it's terrible. It can be terrible, the pain can be very real, but for most people, being trans is a very complicated thing that involves a whole spectrum of emotions. This is kind of where using dysphoria as an exclusive defining characteristic of trans people isn't necessarily an accurate way of representing experience of being trans. As a trans person who does experience dysphoria, I can tell you that dysphoria is not the only thing that makes me transgender. It's not even the bulk of my experience as trans. It's about the journey it took to disregard expectations and find myself. It's about the layers of I had to peel away just to figure out who I was. It's about the pride and elation I felt when I found the words to describe my identity. It's about the sense of community I found with others like me. It's the way I understand gender and the way that I move through the world. Gender is complex. Transgender, even more so. The thing that Kai and I have in common is that we underwent a process in trying to understand ourselves and our gender, teasing apart what society asked of us and what we wanted for ourselves. We both discovered through that process that we didn't identify with the gender we were assigned at birth. The difference is that this realization doesn't cause distress for Kai in the way that does for me. And that's the only difference. So what? If distress is a defining characteristic, what are we saying about what it means to be trans? And what are we telling our youth then, too? That who they are is contingent on how much pain they feel. I want to live in a world where transgender doesn't equate to pain and suffering. Because ultimately, the pain we feel is not what unites us. It's the identity we claim, and the unique journey we each took to find it. I don't want any trans person to go through this thinking that to be trans means to hurt. That only succeeds in saying to the world, if you want to be in pain, be trans. If you want to be happy, be cis. We are so much more than that. Our lives and our experiences are so, so much more. Strong, same. Strong, same. Number five. We privilege some narratives over others. True that. I've been told before that I'm not trans enough. I was hurting so much the first time I heard it that I actually blogged about it. This was pretty ironically before I understood the asterisk problematic. As a genderqueer writer, I've been told that more than once that I have no business writing about the transgender community because I'm not, quote, actually trans. And since I experienced this kind of invalidation, I've been sitting pretty comfortably in the camp of everyone is trans enough and your gatekeeping is BS. That one is censored. At what point will we stop tearing each other apart and start lifting each other up? I know what it feels like to have an identity that completely opened up your mind and your world, something that gave you new life and a sense of home, come crumbling down at the accusation that you're not actually trans and instead just following the latest trend. I'm just not interested in creating a power dynamic where some trans people are inherently better, more worthy, more trans, or more important than other trans people. That, to me, is not what social justice looks like. Damn right it isn't. That's supremacy. I'm up with you, Sam. Using dysphoria as an ultimate measure of transness means that any trans person for whom dysphoria is not present, not the language or framework they prefer to use, or not significant in their experience is suddenly invalid. It says, these trans people are the real trans people and everyone else should be quiet. Our community has a history of doing this. Take, for instance, the transgender community's initial resistance to including non-binary people. Oh, wait, that's not history. That still happens. I'm fed up with the power dynamics in our community and see absolutely no need to create more. We are still struggling day after day to dismantle the hierarchies that already exist. We can already see the ways that certain narratives are privileged over others, the ways that certain voices are heard and others are silenced, and frankly, I don't want to be part of that. I think we should be disrupting those narratives, not going along with them. We should be affirming that the trans community is diverse, complex, and unique, not monolithic and homogenous. 6. It breeds transphobia. There is a pervasive fear that if we leave transgender as a term that relies on self-identification, it will be rendered meaningless by people who claim it for the wrong reasons. But this weirdly mirrors a lot of oppressive attitudes that are used against all trans people. Take the trans bathroom debate, for instance. There is a widespread belief that cis people will pretend to be trans just to get into the wrong restroom and violate other people. When you're on the side of Fox News, maybe it's time to reevaluate your stance. If trans people interrogate other trans people with disbelief, we are giving permission to the rest of the world to do it to us. If we bully trans people and tell them they are deceiving other people or following a fad, we're telling cis people that they can accuse us of being imposters too. We're taking away the right to self-identify and giving the rest of the world permission to misgender us if they too decide we're not trans enough. We tell the rest of the world that they don't have to believe us because we don't believe in each other. If you don't believe a trans person when they say they are trans, why should a cis person believe you? Strong. I like this. When my friend told me that they didn't experience dysphoria, my initial reaction was one of hostility, judgment, and skepticism. I'm forever grateful, though, that they took the time to educate me. I had no idea that there were trans people who didn't experience dysphoria. But now that I know, I work hard to make sure that Kai and others like them are included in the trans community. I've received a lot of pushback as a writer when I talk about dysphoria not being a requirement for trans people, and I don't necessarily blame them. I was resistant too, and it took me a while to come around. But I believe that there are greater consequences when we exclude trans people on the basis of having a different experience from our own. We become the gender police that we've spent decades criticizing. We become the very thing that has oppressed us for so many years. If gender isn't something that someone else can do for you, then the reality is that it's up to the individual, that there's no wrong answer. It's up to defer debate between outsiders. It's personal and always has been. Letting go of our need to control who is in and who's out, and instead investing that energy into affirming and uplifting others in our community seems like a much more worthy effort. So, who is transgender? Let's keep it simple. Anyone who identifies differently from the gender they were assigned at birth. Full stop. Full stop is right. I cannot agree with you more, Sam. And I really thank you for writing this all the way back from 2015. And it's still relevant in 2016 and 2017 and now 2018. I'm so glad that I found these articles, honestly. So then, again, we're getting into more detail with Sam, who talks about why aren't more trans people denouncing true scum? At Let's Queer This Up. So I'm going to show you what that headlines looks like, what that logo looks like in one moment. This probably may or may not be the last article that I read for the evening while, you know, we wrap things up. So thank you for sticking around for this hour so far. Okay, so yeah, Let's Queer Things Up. Why aren't more trans people denouncing true scum? In which Sam attaches a tweet by Peg... Malian, are you scheduled for surgery? And then Sam replies, I'm sorry, are you publicly asking me about my genitals, or am I mistaken? Good one. Good one. Because that's none of her business either. If you ask me where the vast majority of my online harassment comes from, you might be surprised to know that comes from other transgender people. Ever since I published this article on why body dysphoria is not what makes a person transgender, the pushback on social media by a small but vocal minority has been intense. The efforts to silence me, all on the basis that I am not trans enough, has revealed a really dark side to the trans community that I never knew existed. This minority has consisted of trans medicalists, also referred to as true scum, who believe that the only valid transgender people are those who experience body dysphoria, desire a binary medical transition, and are pursuing hormones and surgery. All other trans people are not considered true trans and are referred to as traps, imposters, transgenders, or fakes. So later on, this Pat Evans person tweets, how much does a pee cost? And then they caption it with, are you offering to buy it for me? How sweet. They go on. I remember the first time I was ever harassed by a trans medicalist. I had been desperately trying to navigate a complicated insurance policy, having been living in Michigan, where testosterone was not covered, and now being in California with the same insurance but distinctly different laws. It was an emotionally exhausting time as I tried to figure out what my options were for beginning my medical transition, coming up against legal hoops and roadblocks galore. It was around that same time that a trans medicalist appeared in my Twitter mentions accusing me of pretending to be trans for attention and tweeting to followers of mine that they should withdraw support from me because I was not yet on testosterone. Imagine the hell I was already in. I wanted testosterone and I couldn't access it. I was struggling to figure out how to come out to my family, fearful of rejection. Every day I was trapped in a body that I could not change, sitting on a secret that I was convinced would destroy my family. And then, a trans medicalist, someone in my community, was punishing me for not having the very thing I was trying desperately to get. It was a slap in the face. I can't describe the pain to you. After all of my struggles as trans, the self-hated, the desperation, the dysphoria, the self-harm, the confusion, I was being told that I was faking it. Faking it. I hadn't known up until that point that there were actually trans people that thrived on being violent towards other trans people. I didn't think a transgender person would ever intentionally misgender, harass, and silence other trans people. But they're real. They're out there. And every so often, they pitch a fit on social media, hurling violent language in my direction. They ask me invasive questions about my body, intentionally misgender me at every opportunity, interrogate my validity as a trans person, and mock my transition. So then, this other person sends them an awful tweet as well. FYI, you know, and they misgender him. He might have a surprise for the Wolverines. A new piece. And then they caption with misgendering me and making fun of gender-affirming surgeries. Cute. It can be tempting to say that these folks are simply an exceptional bunch, not really representative of the community, something we should ignore and disregard. It can be tempting to write them off as a small minority that poses no real threat to the larger community. But I'm not here to do that. I'm exposing this harassment publicly, including just a fraction of some of the tweets I have received in one day, because of the trans community needs to acknowledge that these kinds of toxic ideologies exist in our spaces. We can't maintain the attitude that if we keep them out of sight and out of mind, everything is okay. It's not okay. The reality is that our community can't continue to ignore a harmful, violent minority that actively excludes, attacks, and misgenders people under the guise of protecting transness. Our community can't continue to ignore, the harassment that non-binary people, in particular, are enduring because we refuse to speak out against toxic and exclusive definitions of transness. Our community can't sit on the sidelines while this violent rhetoric continues to silence, shame, and harm trans people everywhere. If we give other trans people a free pass to attack our integrity and our identities, what do you think will stop cisgender people from doing the same? Transgender people are not defined on the basis of their bodies. They aren't the surgeries they may get or the hormones they may or may not pursue. Transness is an identity, a sense of self in relation to culturally constructed ideas about gender. It's how we identify. It's the framework that we place ourselves within to better understand who we are. And it's effing personal. Every person should be able to define their gender on their own terms. Otherwise, what the hell are we doing? We fought to reclaim our genders from those imposed on us at birth, so why should we impose it again to other trans people? Real talk. Transgender is not an exclusive club that we can bar people from because they refuse to conform to cis-normative ideas about bodies and gender. When we deny transgender people the right to self-identify, that's an act of violence. How can we demand respect as a community when we aren't willing to respect one another? There are countless transgender people who either do not want to pursue a medical transition, their prerogative, or are unable to access it due to financial barriers or abusive caretakers. I'm in the former, financial stuff. They are arguably the most vulnerable in our community, and they are subjected to abuse, not just from the outside world, but from people in our own community. If we are not denouncing this kind of violence and against other trans people, if we sit idly while they spew this kind of hatred, we become complicit in it. We allow people in our community to be degraded, erased, and attacked when this kind of behavior goes unchecked and unacknowledged. And by extension, we give transphobic people outside the community full permission to engage with us in the exact same way. Trans medicalists are not unicorns or make-believe. They attack me and countless others on a regular basis with more fervor than the time before, feeling emboldened by the total lack of accountability. It's easy to say they aren't really part of a community. It's easy to ostracize them, block them, dismiss them. And it's more difficult, and yes, truly necessary, to realize that underneath the violence is a shaken, fragile, and troubled transgender person who is still part of our community. For the reason alone, we must call them in. It's more difficult to say that, as a community, we must act, because if we don't, the violence will continue. Yes, it's our responsibility to hold them accountable, and to stand in solidarity with those who have suffered at the hands of their abuse. Because if we aren't taking care of each other, who is going to stand up for us? Today I was harassed, but tomorrow it could be you. Signed, Sam Dylan Finch. That was a lovely article, by the way. This guy, he writes so many awesome articles, so I had to share them with you. And this was just all in the span of the year 2015. Like, dang, you were busy that year. Let's see. There's a couple articles that I'll probably drop down in the comments, but for now, I think that will conclude my program. I really appreciate you tuning in. Please comment below with your thoughts and questions. Check out, you know, the website at kppfm.com/finding-me. I have a Patreon. I have a Ko-fi. You can, you know, support my Patreon so that you can continue my work. But I strongly suggest otherwise that you put kppfm.com/donate and mention my program so that, you know, I can continue running this show. It really, you know, helps encourage me to know that you guys are listening to me at all. So, with that, let's see. Did you find yourself today while finding me? Feel free to send me a message. You can contact us at 701-566-0917, at Nemo Potatoes on Facebook or Twitter, and Instagram. Contact me through my contact on the kppfm.com/finding-me and hit the contact tab or email me at nemo@kppfm.com. You can follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can. Donations to Fargo Moorhead's newest low-power commercial-free radio station can be made at our website on kppfm.com/donate and check out our underwriting opportunities at kppfm.com/underwriting-opportunities on how you can support the first queer radio program in the Red River Valley. Thanks for tuning in. See you next month on the first Wednesday here on Finding Me. Thank you.